This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 33. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, a podcast about developers who are often launching software products, whether you've built your first product or just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made.
So for today's podcast, this is going to be a continuation of last week's podcast where we were talking with Harry Hollander of More Aware Software about some of the different professional services you may need for your business.
The other topic that we were going to talk about is corporate benefits and payroll services and maybe even HR. For us, we have even though we have five employees, we're spread out in four different states, and dealing with healthcare, vision plans, 401ks, payroll, and benefits would have just been a nightmare for us to manage individually. Like, just the amount of time and effort it would have taken to figure out what to do and how to do it would have been really difficult. So when Ted and I hired our first employee, who was already, the two of us were in two different states and our employee was going to be in the third state, we decided the only way we could do it practically was to get a professional employer organization. And basically what that is, it's outsourced HR. It's been awesome. It's definitely a cost for us, but everything related to all of the benefits you would expect if you go to work at a big company, we're able to offer to our employees and not have to deal with anything in terms of the time it would take to figure out what to do. Like, for example, I'm in Oregon. I have Blue Cross insurance. Our employees in California have Kaiser or whatever they want. There's choices, and we do a 401k plan for everyone, and it's been really awesome to be able to consolidate that and not have to deal with it. Rob, how do you deal with your own benefits and retirement savings and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I noticed really early on, before I had transitioned full-time into the business, I was just saving in like a personal IRA or whatever, but it tops out at like, what, $3,000 or $4,000 a year. And I was thinking like, I'm never going to be able to save as much money as I need to save. And so pretty quickly, I think I did a simple first and then a SEP IRA. And those are just, kind of sole proprietor type things, but they're very simple. And even if I hired a couple of employees, I could have still maintained that structure. So I wouldn't have needed to gone down the 401k route, which what I've heard is it just gets a lot more complicated. You don't tend to want to administer that yourself. But that is how I handle retirement now. And I talk to my accountant about that every year. And so if someone's out there and you're thinking, I want to be able to put a lot more away for retirement, more than this $4,000 personal limit, then I would definitely recommend, looking into something like that. And then in terms of insurance, I've been lucky enough. I did pay my own insurance a few years ago, and I would just go out and find insurance. Again, since I don't have employees, I don't have to worry about real complexity there. And now my wife has a full-time job. She has her PhD now, so I'm able to be on her insurance, which has been quite a welcome change. And then in terms of payroll, that actually was a bit of a challenge, and I was trying to figure out how to do that. And then Mike recommended Paychecks. I think similar to your experience with kind of outsourcing the employee benefits, Paychecks has been a godsend, and they're super inexpensive for one-person companies. I think it's like $49 a month. It is an absolute no-brainer for how much stuff they do and how many forms I see them fill out and sending to the government and all the taxes they retain. And just the amount of time and effort it would require me to manage this it's insane. I bet it'd be 5 to 10 hours a month for me probably to do what they do. And I pay $49 for it. So definitely glad there are companies like that out there.
What I heard is that companies like Paychecks also offer, if you're willing to move up, beyond just the payroll part of it, they can also offer the 401k and benefits and all of that stuff as well. And I think you can kind of do it cafeteria style and choose just the things that you don't want to handle yourself.
And that makes sense because now they have me right at $49 and I love their service and I know the people in the local branch. And absolutely, if I hired employees, I would totally go to them and say, do you offer this? It totally makes sense why they have this low price point thing for someone like me, because I'm not going to look around. If I needed 401k, I would totally go to them.
I've had pretty good experience with Paychecks as well. I mean, I used Paychecks several years ago, and then I stopped and I switched over to ADP for a while, and then I ended up canceling that at the end of the year, and I switched back to Paychecks, mainly because I felt like I was getting charged for things, and I just had no idea what they were. And so I just got sick of it, and when I talked to Paychecks, they had that thing that I introduced you to, which was $49 a month for a sole proprietor, and or for a single owner of the company. And as you said, it was just a no-brainer. So they helped me out with quite a few things, actually. Probably a lot more than that $50 a month would actually cover. But they've been really good so far. And I'm in the same boat with you. I would probably take a serious look at them if I were looking at other things. One of the things I ran into, though, was in the very beginning, I was trying to look at places where I could cut costs. And it looked to me like, you know, oh, I can just write myself a check every month. And on the surface, that sounds like a great idea. But then when you get into having to withhold state taxes and federal taxes and do all these fancy things with Medicaid and Medicare and do all those withholdings and send those in, it just becomes a nightmare very, very quickly, and it just was not worth it. One of the other things that I did early on was I was on my wife's health insurance, probably just like you were when you started, Rob. And I did that for a couple of years. And then when she decided that she wanted to stay home with the kids, then I decided that I was going to go out and start looking for healthcare. And at the time, I had somebody who I had brought on in a 1099 basis. And long story short, I brought him on full time and handed everything off to him and said, hey, I need you to go find out this information for us. We need a health plan. We need a dental plan. We need to do payroll. We need to do all these different things. And I need you to take care of it because I just didn't want to deal with it. So he went out and he found all these different plans. And, you know, we worked through a local health insurance underwriting agency who focused on small companies that basically have less than 10 employees. And, you know, they basically handled everything. And I've been working with them for, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years now. They keep me notified of all the different options, all the different changes from 1 year to the next. And Massachusetts is a little different than other states where our health care is basically mandatory at this point. So there's all these new state laws that we have to adhere to. And, you know, it's honestly kind of a mess. And I'm glad that they take care of that and I don't have to handle it.
So, Mike, do you put away retirement money into a 401k or also a SEP plan or something like that?
I have a couple of different things. I have some accounts with a third-party financial institution that I basically send them money every month. And then I also have a SEP IRA account. And what I was told when I started looking at that was that I could get a SEP IRA account, but as soon as I hired employees, I had to offer them the exact same benefits that I was getting with a SEP IRA account.
Yep, so, I remember that.
Yeah, that was the one thing that struck me as not necessarily odd, but it was one of those things like, ooh, I didn't know that. And I'm glad somebody told me.
We discovered a couple of years ago one of the dirty secrets of the 401k. When I had a real job, my employers were being kind by offering matching to the 401k. But it turns out that as an employer, if you offer the matching, it lets you, as the owner, actually put in more into the plan. And that's the reason that most companies do it. And we ended up offering matching on our 401k for the same reason, because basically, you know, because we're small, Ted and I are the owners and we contribute a significant amount from the whole pool of employees into the 401k.
So in terms of other corporate benefits, what about $10 discounts on tickets to Disneyland? How do you guys handle those?
I mean, the thing is, I'll occasionally pay for things that I don't necessarily need to. And in a way, I look at them as a corporate benefit. So let me give you an example. It was probably 3 years ago, I think. I was teaching a class for Symantec, and I had a bunch of people come up to my office here in the Boston area and was teaching this class. So it was probably six students or so, and brought them in and just said, hey, you guys want to go to a Red Sox game this week? And I went out and I used the corporate expense account and just decided to buy everybody Red Sox tickets. And I actually brought the employees that I had with me as well, and we went to a Red Sox game. And you could almost think of that as a corporate benefit, because obviously we wouldn't have been able to go to a Red Sox game otherwise. But that's money I didn't have to spend, but I was able to write it off completely as a marketing expense, because, you know, we sat there and we talked to those guys and we were trying to solicit additional business. We didn't have to, but we did. There's a lot of ways that you can be creative with the money that you spend in a business and how you categorize it. And obviously, you can't just flagrantly disobey the rules and stuff, but there are certainly things that people are interested in doing, and you can essentially write those off as either team building exercises or research and development. You know, it depends on what you're doing and what your business is.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting question, Harry. Since you guys are all distributed, do you ever get like the whole gang together for a company meeting annually or something and, you know, make that a team building thing and pay for everybody?
We haven't A couple years ago, we had a party and we all got together at that point. But in general, we go to trade shows and that's the opportunity that we take to all get together and hang out as a
company. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think that's part of the value of the trade shows for us. In addition to soliciting more business and meeting customers, it's a really good excuse to all get together. If we didn't have that, we would still do it. That's one of the downsides of being a distributed company is you don't get to have those casual conversations that you normally do if you're all sitting in the same office.
Right.
But with a trade show, you can basically write off the entire thing as a business expense because those dollars come out of your marketing budget, I assume, because you all have to go. You all have to do different things for the trade show. You know, different people contribute different things. Some people man the booth. Some people set it up. Some people do some of the marketing things associated with the booth and building the collateral and making sure that everything's there because there's logistical headaches. I mean, I've done conferences as well, and they can be quite expensive. And it'd be very easy to write that entire thing off. And especially if you just stay an extra day or two. I mean, that could be a corporate strategy meeting. You know, who knows? There's lots of ways that you can write those trips off and still make it beneficial for everybody because everybody's getting together and getting that face time that they need.
I think that's true. And it sounds like we have a similar philosophy to you guys is, you know, in general, we're pretty cheap guys. But when it comes to doing things that benefit our business and benefit our customers, we're willing to spend money. And it's totally an allowable thing to spend money on your business. And, you know, your accountants can take care of that.
The word is frugal. We are frugal, not cheap.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think an example, we recently bought a Aeron chair. And, you know, those are expensive chairs. But when you think about the fact that you're sitting in front of a computer for 8-10 hours a day, that's a very obvious place to spend some money on your business.
Yeah, totally. Did you buy an Aeron for everyone?
No, just the owners.
If you said just the owners, so help me.
It's really embarrassing. I don't even have a chair. I have too much nervous energy to sit down. So I pace around all day.
Do you work at a standing table then?
I've got kind of a high table. At some point when I get over my frugalness, I might get one of those tables that's got a motorized engine to lift it up and take it down.
Yeah, I've seen those. They're awesome.
Yeah, I have an Aeron chair.
I have like an IKEA equivalent or something like that. Yeah, at some point I need to invest.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of Aeron chairs. I got one of the regular Aeron chairs that everybody is kind of probably much more familiar with that I sit in on a regular basis. And then I also have what most people probably aren't nearly as aware of. Herman Miller makes these Aeron side chairs, which are, I don't know, I think $400 or $500 a piece. But I got a pair of those to sit in my office so that if I have people in here, I can just kind of sit down with them and have an actual meeting with them without them having to stand the whole time.
You know, that reminds me of a funny story. When we were still really early on, we had a customer who didn't want to just buy our software over the phone or the internet. And so he decided he was going to, on his own dime, fly to Ted's house and sit in his living room and get a demo, you know, with Ted's dog crawling all around him and that kind of stuff. So I'm not shocked at all that you might expect someone to show up at your house and want to see you in person.
Well, the other thing is I used to have an office and I closed it down because it was an expense that I didn't necessarily need. I mean, I was blowing, and I say blowing because it really was blowing money, but I was blowing about, it was like $2,100 or $2,200 a month in rent, and it was ridiculous. I mean, it was awful. So I said, I've had it. This is enough. So basically closed the office, and I actually bought out the lease to get out of it early because it was cheaper for me to buy out the lease and leave than it was to stick around. But then I had all this extra equipment and stuff that I had to find a place to put it. So in my basement, I basically redid my basement and, you know, I've got a nice setup down here.
Yeah, if we were doing video Skype, you would see just boxes and boxes behind Mike. He basically has like a server farm in his basement, but it's like in boxes.
So, I mean, I have, you know, those 42U rack chassis? Well, I have a half chassis that's got 21U in it. And I've got, let's see here, 10, 11, 12, 13, I think 13 servers in it.
Jeez.
Plus, I've got another rack off to the side. And those servers that are in there are just my Windows servers. And then I've got another rack that is kind of one of those. It looks more like a shelf, to be perfectly honest, but it basically contains my Unix lab. So I have a Windows lab and a Unix lab. And, you know, one of the machines that I have in my Windows lab, so to speak, is an ESX server with dual quad core, 32 gigs of RAM that I load that up with all these virtual machines. And then I have all these other ones that, you know, they basically interact between each other. And then in my Unix lab, I have AIX, HPUX, Linux, Solaris, you know, what have you in there, just because I do a lot of things with a lot of different operating systems. So I kind of need it all.
You know, it's funny, there's such a stark contrast between like how you're set up and how I am. And it's just, we just do different things. I mean, I don't do all the complex, like you need a whole networking environment to test all kinds of crazy stuff out. But I don't have any of that. I have a desktop computer to edit videos. And then I work off my laptop 24/7. And that's it. Like, you know, I can just pick up the laptop and be gone. I can't imagine having all that hardware and having to, I don't know, maintain it and keep it around and keep all the virus stuff up to date and all that.
Well, it's an isolated network, so not everything is completely up to date. But I mean, the other thing is some of the software I work with is patching software and software delivery. So honestly, some of it needs to be a little bit out of date because I need to be able to test to make sure that, you know, the software works and I can deploy software to it and deploy patches and things like that. So,
right. Harry, how about your guys' setup? Do you have are you co-located at a data center? Where?
Yeah, so we do, we just rent all of our equipment. So other than our laptops, we don't have a lot of computers either. And none of us even has a desktop computer, to be honest.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's a good way to go. If I wasn't, the only reason I went with the desktop, by the way, was because I edited HD video and you need just massive hard drives and I wanted RAID and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, if I wasn't doing that specifically, there's no way I'd have a desktop anymore.
Right.
So that's interesting. Yeah, you guys, so you rent, you lease, right? You lease your
exactly.
host and stuff, and that works out. Is that purely from a cash flow standpoint that it works out, or what made you decide to do that instead of, you know, kind of buy and maintain?
Well, the main reason is that maintaining servers is no fun. So it seems like based on the price of, you know, upgrading things and all of that, leasing equipment for a short period of time, maybe a year or two at a time, means that you can constantly be upgrading all of your servers. And that's what we end up doing. So I think our oldest server is like 2 years old, and that's probably about to go as well. So because the price of hardware keeps going down, you can always get the latest, greatest machine for less than the old one that you have sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things to point out is in my lab environment, for those 10 of those machines that I have in my lab, I bought them for collectively, I think $6,000 or $8,000 or so off of eBay. And it was just some distributor who goes out to these companies who are either shutting down or selling off some of their old equipment. And they just basically turn it around and resell it for them. And, you know, I presume that they mark it up, but I just bought it from them and, you know, got this rack of 10 servers that I just threw into my rack and I'm able to configure them in any way that I want and use them. But they don't need to be top of the line. So I don't necessarily care if they have like 10 cores in each of them. It's not really that big a deal. I mean, I use them for testing and for building a distributed network that's got all these different machines and the way they interact.
Right. Oh, that makes sense. I didn't realize that. I thought when we always talked about your hardware, I thought you'd bought everything new from Dell or whatever.
Yeah, my entire Unix lab is all secondhand stuff. I didn't buy any of it new. So, and it's funny, but like, so for example, I have three Solaris machines. I have a Solaris 8, Solaris 9, and Solaris 10, and all of them are the Spark architecture. And I believe I paid $60 for one of them, and I paid $75 for shipping on it. Which is
wow.
Ridiculous, but they were cheap, you know, so, and they do what I need them to do. They're not great machines. I think they have 20 or 30 gig hard drives or something ridiculous like that, but I don't need them for much. I mean, I need them to run the operating system, and that's about it, to be perfectly honest.
You know, what frustrates me about this whole topic is these are all things that you have to have, right, at some point in your business. And like, I feel like even though we've gone through this process, all of us have, right, none of us knows the answer. And we're not even sure if what we did is the right thing. And I don't know if there's other resources or something where you can find more. That's what I wish existed.
Well, I think part of the reason is that there's no hard and fast rule for any of these things, because what you do is going to be different depending on where you are, how much money you're bringing in, how much time you're spending on your business, you know, what your liabilities are, what your expected assets coming in are going to be. I mean, there's all these different things that kind of factor into it. And because some of the process for getting some of it is just very opaque, you don't know what the rules are. It just makes it hard to judge whether you got a good deal or whether you should have done something different.
Well, what I want to say is that with your listener base, people thinking of starting companies, that, you know, someone should build marketplaces for each of these professional services and make it an open process, because that probably would make me a lot happier.
Yeah, there was actually, I was actually just looking on Angie's List to try to figure out if they have CPAs and lawyers and all that. I know they have like contractors and doctors. Oh, here's the list. Yeah, I'm not really seeing professional services people here. It's more contractors, health folks, outdoor type stuff. So I have heard of a company. There's a company starting locally here in Fresno called businessbites.com, and they are actually looking to get, I think they're going to start with lawyers and perhaps accountants, and they're going to do, well, it's kind of a interesting business model, but they're going to have ratings for them. And then they're also, you're going to be able to engage someone for just to get advice for like a very short period of time online. So you can click and like schedule a 5-minute consult with somebody and they bill you by the minute. So I thought that was an interesting idea as well. And then not only could you ask a quick question if you had it and hopefully get a good answer, but then if you found someone you liked in that 5 minutes, then you could obviously engage them. I mean, that's the whole point of why the lawyer would do it, right? Is that it's kind of a lead generation thing from their end. But yeah, I haven't heard of a good one-stop shop for this kind of stuff. So hopefully we've provided some value today, and we are at least offering enough advice for folks who are listening that they have a, you know, some type of bearing on how we might do it. I'm struck by how our approaches were all fairly similar. You know, even though we are in different situations and we have maybe some different recommendations, that we really did kind of go about it getting recommendations and move forward with each of them in a fairly similar manner. I think that's a good sign.
You know, it's funny. So when I told Ted that you invited me on your show, he's like, so you're going to talk for an hour about something that you just hate?
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking like, this is going to be a really valuable show, but it's going to be really boring, in my opinion, or because of the subject matter. I hate this stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah, I feel funny. The same way. Yeah.
This is totally not, it's not our core competency.
Right. Well, and I assume that we have more experience than, you know, most folks out there who are starting, right? And that's just scary. I imagine the impact of doing it wrong has got to be high, you know? Like, at some point, if someone sues you or whatever, and you're not prepared for it, it's probably a big deal. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've been lucky enough that that hasn't happened, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
Honestly, I almost feel like you have to screw up pretty bad, you know, beyond what common sense would allow in order for something to seriously bite you. I mean, I've done some things in the past that I would certainly not do again. And, you know, there are places where I can think of specifically where having an attorney probably would have helped me a lot more. So, I mean, for example, one time back in the past, I had signed a contract where I was basically a subcontractor and I would get paid within 7 days after they got paid. Well, their customer didn't pay them. And this went on for like 6 months. So unfortunately, because I had signed a contract that said I would not get paid until 7 days after they did, they were not in breach of contract in any way, shape, or form. But a good attorney would have probably looked at that and said, that's not a good idea for you to agree to that, and here's why. Whereas I'm looking at it saying, well, this is perfectly reasonable. You know, they get paid, and within 7 days, I get paid. That sounds reasonable. But it turns out that it just wasn't. And I think that whatever the professional service is, whether it's CPA or insurance or attorney, they can certainly help prevent you from mistakes that are probably more common. But at the end of the day, I mean, you use some common sense and you're not going to get bit too badly.
So I think you're right that using common sense can get you most of the way. And then good luck, I think, or just reasonable luck is the other thing that'll keep you from running into real issues with this.
So I think that about wraps it up for today's episode. Rob, why don't you take it away?
If you have a question or comment, call it into our voicemail number at 888-801-9690. Or you can email it in MP3 or text format to questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music, it's an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups and subscribe to it in iTunes or via RSS. At startupsfortherestofus.com. A full transcript of this podcast is available at our website, startupsfortherestofus.com. We'll see you next time.